and Arjuna, stationed on a great chariot, drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. Purport, in contrast with the conch shell blown by Bhishmadev, the conch shells in the hands of Krishna and Arjuna are described as transcendental. The sounding of the transcendental conch shells indicated that there was no hope of victory for the other side because Krishna was on the side of the Pandavas. Jayastu Panduputranam Yeshang Pakshe Janardanaha. Victory is always with persons like the sons of Pandu, because Lord Krishna is associated with them. And whenever and wherever the Lord is present, the goddess of fortune is also there, because the goddess of fortune never lives alone without her husband. Therefore, victory and fortune were awaiting Arjuna, as indicated by the transcendental sound produced by the conch shell of Vishnu, O Lord Krishna. Besides that, the chariot on which both the friends were seated had been donated by Agni, the fire god, to Arjuna, and this indicated that this chariot was capable of conquering all sides wherever it was drawn over the three worlds. Tata shvetair hayar yuktai yuktai mahati syandane stito madhava pandavas chaiva divyo shanko pradadvatuhu. On the other side, both Lord Krishna and Arjuna, situated on a great chariot drawn by white horses, sounded their transcendental conch shells. This purport reflects the final verse of Bhagavad Gita, which is, who can say? No, it's not the last verse of Bhagavad Gita. You say it? Say it loudly. Who's saying it? Who's that? Please say it loudly so we can all hear. Go ahead. Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. All right, three quarters. Very good. Thank you. So, what's the translation? Can you say in English? Did you learn it in the translation in English or in Slovenian? All right, say it in English. If you know what the Sanskrit words are. Actually, I never learned the translations exactly word by word in English. But if you know the Sanskrit, then you can more or less say it anyway. So, please. Dhanadhara means he's holding a bow. It's called a bow. Holder of the bow. The great archer, Prabhupada translates it. Tatra Shrir, first thing, Shri, opulence, yeah. Victory, morality. Tatra Shri, Vijaya, Bhut, Dhruva, Niti, Matyama. This is my opinion, Sanjay says. So this purport reflects the conclusion of, or at least the story-wise, in as far as the story is concerned. This Bhagavad Gita is spoken, it's part of the Mahabharata, so... The story goes that the war was fought and the Pandavas were successful. Why? Jayastu Pandu Putranam Yesham Pakshe Janardana. Because Krishna was on their side. So you see how this fits? That wherever there is Krishna, wherever there is Arjuna, there is opulence, victory, morality, all these things are there. Now, between the blowing of the conches by Krishna and Arjuna. What's the name of the conches? Krishna's conch, what's the name? Arjuna's conch? Has someone gotten? Who's that? Devadatta. Okay, good. So, between this, Krishna driving the chariot, Arjuna, the great warrior, when you blow the conch, it gives feeling of victory, doesn't it? You feel that when the conch is blown? Very auspicious sound. Do you take that when you go on Harinam Sankirtan, you blow the conch? You do that? Do you go on Harinam Sankirtan? You blow the conch, especially when some demons start to threaten. You blow the conch and they be... And many times we see, I don't know how much you get demons here, but... You get many demons here also? They're everywhere. They're everywhere. But, of course, I'm talking about remembering a long time back when I used to go regularly in England. So there are many, it's a bastion of demonicism. So you'll get many demoniac people. When you blow the conch, they become bewildered. In Bengal and Orissa, that's still a custom to the present day, at dusk, which is the time when Lord Shiva goes in the sky followed by so many inauspicious ghosts. And the ladies, they perform some sound, they light incense, they blow the conch, they do the ulu sound. And that's the time for arati. Actually, the sandhya arati, evening arati, is performed just after the sun has set, and that makes everything very auspicious. So when Krishna and Arjuna are blowing their conch, it's a victory sound. It's a sign of strength. And that will be reflected at the end of Bhagavad Gita when Sanjay says to Dhritarashtra that, yes, wherever there is Krishna, wherever there is Arjuna, there will be victory. You don't have a chance. And then after that, the battle was fought, and Dhritarashtra's sons, they were all annihilated. 100 sons. Actually, he had 101 sons, because he had one son, another son, by a Vaishya wife, not from Gandhari. But he was fighting. At the beginning of the battle, he was on the side of the Kurus. But then Yudhishthir said to everyone, hey, look, you folks, you're all on the wrong side. Why don't you come and join me? One king. That was Yuyutsu, the son of another son of Dhritarashtra. So 100 sons. They were all killed, one after the other. Every single one of them was killed by Bhimsena. The last one was Duryodhana. He was the last one to be killed. So they were defeated. Victory was sure. But in between this blowing of the conches and Sanjay's announcement that Krishna and Arjuna, they will certainly be victorious, there is the speaking of the Bhagavad Gita, in which Arjuna, from being in the absolutely opulent, victorious position of having his chariot driven by Krishna, the personality of Godhead, he has doubts in the middle of the battlefield. What a place to have doubts. When you're just about to go and fight. And at that time, I mean, he could have had doubts at any other time, but just at that time, if he had had doubts one day before the battle, or 2 days, or even 1 hour, but just about to start the fight, and at that point, he becomes weak-hearted. That Krishna told him, Hridya Dorabalyam, Tyaktva Hridya Dorabalyam. Krishna tells him, give up this weakness of kshudram hridya dorbalyam, this petty weakness of heart. Give it up and stand up. Parantapa, you're supposed to be the chastiser of the enemies. And now you've got wobbly knees. Do you know what that means? Wobbly knees, you say in English. When someone's afraid, you say, when someone's afraid, that's a physical symptom. When you become afraid, you feel like your knees have turned into jelly. They can't support you anymore. So Arjuna, he said that now I'm feeling weak and I'm trembling. My bow is dropping down. Garland is dropping down. So what a time to have doubts. But Krishna preached to him. And again he became free from doubts. And he was ready to fight. And he went on to fight. And he won. So we are hearing this Bhagavad Gita. It's relevant to all of us because we all face doubts. As Prabhupada explains, doubts are like demons. Krishna is called Madhusudana because he killed the demon called Madhu. And he's killing the doubts of Arjuna. Arjuna has doubts. What is the result of having doubts? The result of having doubts is that we lose our enthusiasm to serve Krishna. Isn't it? If we're convinced about Krishna consciousness, then we'll always be very enthusiastic to serve Krishna, and Krishna will help us. And such devotees become empowered to serve Krishna. Just like we see up to date, Arjuna has been empowered to serve Krishna. You see here it's described that the chariot on which the friends were seated had been donated by Agni, the fire god, to Arjuna when Arjuna was performing, so what happened was Agni wanted to eat the Kandava forest because he'd lost his appetite. Agni means he's whatever's offered in the fire, he's eating. But there's one sacrifice, one king, I can't remember, he was performing so many sacrifices one after the other, putting so many things in the fire that Agni, he lost his digestion. Digestion means Agni. But he lost it, he became overloaded. Just like if you put too much in the fire, you lose it. So to get his, of course that was also the result of a curse. But to get his appetite back, he had to eat the Kandava forest. But the Maya Danava was living in that forest, and he was happened to be protected by. I'm getting mixed up now. So that forest that Indra he wanted to protect. So Indra was going to throw the rain to stop the fire, Agni eating it. So then Arjuna, who is Indra's son, had to thwart Indra by shooting so many arrows that the rain could not, the water could not drop inside the forest. He had to make a canopy of arrows. And he had to go around the forest and make sure all the animals didn't escape because Agni had to eat them. So any animals that came out, Arjuna would shoot them and then Agni would eat them. So he for this purpose, he was given a chariot. So in this way, he was given a chariot by Agni who helped him. Given the Gandiva bow and the chariot, so he could perform these unusual tasks. Can you imagine stopping the rain by arrows? You shoot so many arrows, the rain can't come. There's no ordinary person can do that. So Krishna was with him at that time, and Krishna is with him, and by Krishna's grace, Arjuna was able to do impossible things. There are many great fighters in the world, but even today, Arjuna's name is very famous. Krishna empowered Arjuna. But at this point, Arjuna has become crazy. He's sitting there with Krishna. Krishna is all prepared for the fight. Everyone's prepared for the fight. But he's lost his sense. He doesn't want to fight. Of course, we understand Arjuna is just speaking like a conditioned soul. He's not actually conditioned, but for the sake of speaking Bhagavad Gita, he became as if conditioned. If he was actually conditioned, then he couldn't have understood Bhagavad Gita so quickly. Because to understand Bhagavad Gita is actually not so easy. Although we say Bhagavad Gita is the introduction to Krishna conscious understanding, it's actually not very easy because it is the summary of all the Upanishads. We'll find so many verses in Gita that are similar to or exactly express themes which are in the Upanishads. And the Upanishads, that's called Vedanta, the end of the Vedic knowledge. And generally the Upanishads, it's understood, they're not very easy to understand. All the different points. Even Krishna himself says that karma, vikarma, akarma, it's very difficult to understand. What are the intricacies of these things? But Arjuna understood Bhagavad Gita within an hour or so. Whereas even great scholars or even great rishis, they have difficulty in understanding what are the Vedas, and sometimes they misinterpret. There are different systems of philosophy built on the Vedas. Jaimini is a very, staunch follower of the Vedas. He very staunchly supports the Vedas, but his conclusions are absolutely materialistic and atheistic in the name of the Vedas. Because mostly the Vedas, they are mostly the Yamidam Pushpitam Vacham, they're the flowery words which recommend elevation to the heavenly planets. But Jaimini is Vedavada Rata, he is attached to the Vedavada. What is the Vedavada? What is stated in the Vedas? Mostly it's stated in the Vedas how to perform sacrifices to enjoy life and go to the heavenly planets. So Jaimini says, I'm following, this is the Vedas, this is what you should do, this is what it says. Then what about the other points where it says, for instance, you should renounce all these sacrifices and simply concentrate on transcendental life. So Jaimini says, well, that's a concession for people who can't perform sacrifices, such as lame people or blind people. That's a consolation prize. But the real thing is to perform sacrifices, be pious, and enjoy life. This is the message of the Vedas. So even great scholars, they may be deluded. Even great demigods, muhyanti yat suryaha, even great demigods may be deluded as to what is the real message of the Vedas, but Arjuna understood very quickly because he's actually a pure devotee, but he's apparently in Maya, he's having doubts. So he addresses Krishna as Madhusudana, you who can kill the doubts. Achyuta, he addresses Krishna as Achyuta, one who never falls down. Arjuna is falling down. He's falling from the transcendental position of having full faith in Krishna. So he's addressing Krishna, Arjuna, as Achyuta, Madhusudana. We'll find him addressing in this way. That you are the one, you can kill the demons of doubts because you never fall down. You're never under the influence of Maya. So he's addressing Krishna like this. And Krishna will remove his doubts. Arjuna did the right thing. When in trouble, he turned to Krishna. Arjuna is naturally a pure devotee, so he has great faith in Krishna. That even in times of great difficulty, if I simply repose my faith in Krishna, then Krishna will certainly help me. Now, it wasn't a blind faith. It wasn't that, we'll see at the end of Gita that Krishna asks Arjuna that, well, I've spoken Bhagavad Gita to you now. Do you understand it? Are you ready to act upon it? What is your decision? If you like, you can accept my words, or if you don't like, you can do whatever you like. This was the test for Arjuna, that have you actually understood Gita? Because if you understand Gita, then you'll do what Krishna says. And Arjuna agrees, yes. Nashto moha smriti labdha tat prasadat vayachuta stitusmi gata sandeha krishe vachanantava. Yes, Krishna, now my illusion is destroyed. I've regained memory of what I'm supposed to be doing, which is serving you. By your mercy, Achyuta. He addresses Krishna again as Achyuta. At the beginning of Gita, he addresses as Achyuta. At the end, yes, you're infallible. Your words are correct. By your mercy, I've been enlightened. Now I'm fixed. My doubts have gone away. Therefore, I am willing to do, I am absolutely determined to do as you order. So by your mercy, my doubts have gone. Now sometimes we think, mercy, we should get mercy from Krishna, we should get mercy from Guru. But Arjuna, he admitted, Twat prasada maya chuta, by your mercy, Krishna, I've become free from illusion. But what was the nature of that mercy? That Arjuna questioned Krishna, and Krishna replied. It wasn't a blind faith, or some sentimental idea of mercy. But the mercy came in the form of the instructions, which Arjuna, he was submissive to understand, but at the same time, trying to understand with his intelligence. The two things are not mutually contradictory. Sometimes we think that if we have to understand with our intelligence, then we can't be submissive. That if you're using your intelligence, it means you should always challenge. No, you can be submissive and use your intelligence also. How is that? That means that basically we understand that we are in ignorance. You can't be submissive if you think you already know everything. If you're challenging, that means you think you already know everything, and there's no use for such a person to approach a guru, because mercy comes down. A guru means who is heavy with knowledge, has more knowledge than you. Now, that doesn't just mean book knowledge, but that means realization. Prabhupada, of course, generally it's understood that Guru is learned. He should be learned in Shastra. Shrotriyam, Brahmanishtam. He should be learned in Shastra by having heard from authorities, and he should be fixed in that knowledge. These are the two basic qualifications for a Guru. But Prabhupada also said that you don't have to be you don't have to be a big, big scholar. Actually, nowadays there are no big, big scholars as previously. Previously there were so many great scholars of Shastra. Nowadays, and really, I mean, much, we have no idea. When we say such and such a devotee is a good scholar, we have no idea what it means in the Vedic tradition to be a great scholar. Really, even the greatest scholars in our movement, they're hardly even 1% of the great scholars of the past, very greatly learned. So, Prabhupada sometimes said, you don't have to be a great scholar to be a guru. Simply, you hear from authorities and you repeat. And that also, of course, that means you should follow yourself. It's You can't teach if you don't follow. You can't probably teach. Acharya means who teaches by his own example. So, one should be submissive, understanding that, first of all, I don't know. That is the first condition. But then one's intelligence should also be awake and alive to try to understand what one is being taught. And one should not also not accept as a guide someone who says something which is bogus or rubbish. So one's intelligence is there, or what we call one's own conscience or discrimination, that is also there. When we say we should submissively hear Shastra, that also means we should keep our own discrimination alive. And if we're sincere, then Krishna will give us, Krishna says he gives us the intelligence by which he comes, by which we can come to him, if we're sincere to understand Krishna. Otherwise, we may hear Shastra from someone who knows Shastra but misinterprets it. And that's very common. Maybe not so much in this country, but it's very common, at least in India. Or in this country, we see also in our movement there are people who take the knowledge of Shastra and they interpret it in various ways for some to come up with some strange ideas which are not according to Guru Parampara. So one should be submissive, but at the same time one's intelligence should be awake so that he's not misled, which is quite possible. Because someone may be, even they may be speaking 99% of what they say is right, but if the 1% is wrong, then that can be a crucial 1%. If on some basic point, everything they say is correct, the one point they may say wrong, Guru is equal to Krishna, everything else is right. But if they say, if on a crucial point they're wrong, then everything becomes disastrously wrong. Or if they say, all the philosophy, everything nice, but you only have to follow 3 regulated principles, and then the whole thing becomes wrong. There may be other more subtle points of disagreement. It's very difficult to find any 2 people who exactly understand Prabhupada's teachings on every point in exactly the same way. But on less important points, there may be some room for, not exactly disagreement, but that may be what may be considered seen from a different angle. The same point seen from a different angle. Or it may be how one enacts or lives the philosophy in his life. For instance, some devotees, they may be extremely strict about sadhana, which is good. And others, for the sake of preaching, they're fully fledged, fully absorbed in spending long hours preaching to non-devotees, making so many efforts, they may not be so strict. So you may say, well, one is preaching, that's a higher service, and you may say, well, he's not following sadhana. But there's scope for both. You can't say either. If both are sincerely trying to serve Krishna, of course it's not that we should give up sadhana altogether. That's also a great mistake in the name of preaching. Or it's not that we should give up preaching in the name of sadhana. But both things have to be there. But exactly how different devotees balance it, that may be different in their own lives. But that's not a matter of a deviation. But then when there's some philosophical deviation, we should know what is that, so that we're not misled. But if we hear from the right source, one who is strictly following, then this result will be there, just like Arjuna heard from Krishna. Arjuna heard from Krishna, what is that? To surrender to Krishna. And if we hear the same thing, to surrender to Krishna, and we act that in our lives, then victory will always be with us. These last words of Bhagavad Gita, that if we remain with Krishna and remain with his devotees, then we'll always be victorious. Material life means parabhava. Parabhava stavad abhoda jata yavanya jigyasita atma tattvam. Rishabdev says that as long as one does not inquire into the absolute truth, then all our activities result in defeat, because we are abodha jata. In this material world, we are born in ignorance. And if we don't make the endeavor to understand the absolute truth, then all our endeavors end in defeat. And that is the whole story of material life. Everyone is defeated. Even we may be victorious, we may be very powerful, our nation may be very powerful, financially very strong, we may have a good position in society, but ultimately everyone is defeated by death. Everyone is, whatever opulent position or prestigious position we may have in society, everyone dies in the same way. You come in this world with nothing, you leave with nothing, and you don't know where you're going. You're in the hands, you're under the laws of material nature, you have to suffer your karma. So everyone is defeated in material life. Unless we make the endeavor to understand the absolute truth, then we are defeated. Because knowledge of the absolute truth, or specifically knowledge of Krishna, is the knowledge by which we can conquer over birth and death. A devotee is victorious. There's a very nice verse, I believe, in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam, which states that a devotee crosses over death. Death crushes everybody. Everybody, in the 11th chapter of Gita, we'll see the description of the universal form, how Krishna, the universal form, time, the personification of time, everyone is entering into Krishna's the blazing mouths of the universal form, just as moths enter into a fire. The moth flies into the fire and is destroyed. So like that, we're all entering into the fire of death. We're defeated. But a devotee, he conquers over death. A devotee dies to live. A devotee doesn't actually die. A devotee is always living. He's always alive. A devotee is always victorious. A devotee is always confident, because he knows he's with Krishna. Krishna will protect him. Krishna, no one can defeat Krishna. So if a devotee keeps close to Krishna, no one can defeat him. Devotees have that confidence. But the warning is there. Arjuna, now he's in the confident position. But he forgot, who is Krishna? What is my relationship with him? That I have to serve him. He forgot that Krishna is Madhava, the husband of the goddess of fortune. And he considered himself as an ordinary person, as Krishna as an ordinary person, as Bhishma, Dronacharya, ordinary. He was in the bodily concept of life. He forgot his service to Krishna and Krishna's transcendental position. He became overcome with doubts. Therefore he came down to the platform of an ordinary person, covered with fear. Baham dvitiya abhiniveshita syat ishadapetasya vipariyosmatihi. When one becomes envious of Krishna, his consciousness changes from pure transcendental consciousness and becomes the opposite. He becomes envious of Krishna and he becomes overcome with fear. This was Arjuna's position. He became overcome with fear. Actually, he was in the material position, means that superficially at least, he must have been envious of Krishna because he didn't want to serve Krishna. If you don't want to serve Krishna, that means there's envy of Krishna. He forgot his connection with Krishna. Therefore, he came to the position of lamentation. Whereas a devotee who is always remembering Krishna, he's always jubilant. He's always happy. He's never overcome by lamentation. So this is the lesson. Don't forget Krishna. Always keep close to Krishna. How can you always keep close to Krishna? You always have to be linked up with Krishna by the process of bhakti yoga, just like Prabhupada gave us this process. Chant minimum 16 rounds. If you don't do that, Maya is going to get you. Already Maya's got you. If you don't chant 16 rounds, you're in Maya. And Maya is going to come more, and you're going to become despondent. And so many doubts and fears and illusions, you're going to be overwhelmed. But if you chant 16 rounds, and chanting 16 rounds means chanting, not mumbling, not whining or wheezing, But chanting the names of Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Chanting. Chanting means praying to Krishna. So if we're actually chanting Hare Krishna, we'll always be jubilant. And if we're not chanting Hare Krishna, then we're in a very dangerous position. Very dangerous. So Prabhupada gave us this program, sadhana. Sadhana means to be in association with Krishna, rising early, chanting the names of Krishna, associating with devotees, taking the darshan of the deities, getting the blessing of the deities, hearing about Krishna. This keeps us in association with Krishna. This gives us strength. And if we don't do that, naturally we're going to become weak. Then so many doubts will come, fears will come, misconceptions will come. Even Arjuna, such a great devotee, he's standing in front of standing behind Krishna. But he forgot, what is my position to serve Krishna? And he became full of doubts. So that may happen to anyone. If you don't chant your rounds, Maya's got you, and Maya's going to get you more, and you're going to be smashed by Maya. If you don't associate with devotees, you're not going to have enthusiasm to chant your rounds. If you don't regularly study Prabhupada's books, if you get involved with so many material things, you're going to lose it. You're going to lose your Krishna consciousness. You've got the great gift of Krishna consciousness. If we don't stick to this process, simple process, joyful process, then we'll stop being simple, we'll become complex, and we'll stop being joyful, we'll become morose. That is the fact. If we don't, sometimes we have so many funny ideas about Krishna consciousness, but actually Krishna consciousness is just the same as it ever was. It's simple, joyful, blissful, natural, chanting Hare Krishna and being happy. Now for the organization of the society and preaching and so on, there may be this management and this project and raising the funds and legal matters and this and that. We should never forget the essence of Krishna consciousness is chanting Hare Krishna and being happy. And if you chant Hare Krishna, you'll be happy. And if you don't chant Hare Krishna, you won't be happy. Krishna consciousness is very simple, isn't it? If you chant Hare Krishna and dance and take prasadam, then you'll be happy because Krishna is full of happiness. And if you're linked with Krishna by bhakti yoga, then you'll be happy. And if you don't chant Hare Krishna, then you'll be morose. It's very simple. Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple. And if you're not simple, then you're going to be so many strange ideas and fears and this is wrong and that is wrong and everything is wrong and you are wrong. What about this one here? No, I can't chant Hare Krishna because this and that and this devotee said this and that one's not right and this one's no good. And what about Krishna? You can see this fault, that fault, but Krishna remains the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even if everyone in the whole world is wrong, you can always chant Hare Krishna. And if you do that, you'll probably see that, well, maybe everyone in the world, everyone in ISKCON isn't wrong anyway. Maybe there's something wrong with me. Therefore, Prabhupada always stressed, keep it simple, chant Hare Krishna. Have faith in Krishna. Krishna will help you. If we want Krishna's help. If we don't want Krishna's help, if we want to make some excuse of being a devotee and at the same time enjoying sense gratification, then Krishna won't give you the intelligence by which you come to Him. Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajitam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogantam yenamam upayanti te. Krishna says, those who are constantly engaged in my service and who are worshipping me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they come to me. So if we're not constantly engaged in Krishna's service, if we're taking it easy, having a little sense gratification, don't be so fanatical, Prabhu. If we're not worshipping Krishna with love, we're not fully engaged in Krishna's service, then Krishna's not going to give us the intelligence by which we come to Him. Instead, Maya will give us the intelligence by which we'll forget Krishna. The opposite side of the inherent understanding in this verse is that those who are fully absorbed and determined and what someone might call fanatical about being Krishna conscious, those who are serious about being Krishna conscious, those who want to love Krishna, Krishna will give them the intelligence by which they can constantly make more and more progress to Him. So inherent in this statement is the opposite, that those who are not fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, who are not worshipping Krishna with love, who are deliberately harboring desires for sense gratification, Krishna won't give them the intelligence by which they come to Him, and they won't come to Him. It's very simple. If you engage in bhakti yoga by hearing and chanting about Krishna and always thinking how to serve Krishna, then you'll be in the transcendental position. But if you do something else or you have some other agenda, then you won't get Krishna. Krishna's not so cheap that you can, He's not like something you put some money in a vending machine and pull it out whenever you like. Do you have those machines here? I guess you do. You put some money in, you pull the slot and some chocolate bar or some Coca-Cola or some cigarettes or something useless. A vending machine means whatever's useless you can get out. So Krishna is not so cheap that whenever you like you can simply go and put something in and take it out. No. Krishna is not take it or leave it. Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam. Those who are always engaged in my service, I give them the intelligence by which they come to me. And here you see Arjuna, he's lost his intelligence. Means he's about to. Now he's blowing his concha. He's with Krishna. They're invincible. Arjuna is invincible as long as he remembers Krishna. But then he's going to have his doubts. Then he becomes a wobbly jelly baby. He loses his strength. But he has the good sense. Let me go to Krishna. Krishna will help me. Then again, he hears from Krishna. He understands. Then he becomes strong and he's ready to fight. And he does the impossible in Krishna's service. So everything is possible by the grace of Krishna, not by our strength, not by our material intelligence, which is puny, however so-called intelligent we may be, not by our mental speculations, not by mixing bhakti yoga with some new ideas. You don't need any new ideas. New idea means useless. The old idea is good. The old idea is chant Hare Krishna, depend on Krishna, study Bhagavad Gita as it is. These old ideas are very good. Chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, these are all old ideas. Because Krishna is old but ever fresh. And material life means whatever it is new, it may appear to be new and very good, but it's stale, dull, it's devoid of spiritual potency. So in material consciousness, something new seems to be, oh, very exciting, very interesting. But material thing, that is the nature of Maya. It looks like it's fresh, but it's inherently rotten. And everything in material life simply becomes rotten and stinks. So similarly, if we introduce material consciousness in the name of Krishna consciousness, we'll find after some time, no bliss. What happened? Means you're not in Krishna consciousness. Whereas Krishna consciousness means it's the same thing, but it's always fresh. What is that? Chanting Hare Krishna, taking Krishna prasad, associating with devotees. Associating with devotees means to discuss about Krishna, topics of Krishna consciousness, pushing on the Sankirtan movement, distributing Prabhupada's books, holding festivals. It's the same thing. It's always fresh. The holy name of Krishna doesn't become stale. If we think it's stale, we have become stale. Otherwise, for those who are in transcendental consciousness, they always find the holy name very blissful, very nice. A materialist, he wakes up every morning, oh no, another day. Throw the alarm clock out the window. You know, this one of my friends told me when I was a kid at school. His father, a big executive officer in some company in London, but he regularly threw the alarm clock out of the window. His habit. He hated. Oh no, another day. But a devotee, jai, another day to serve Krishna. Out of ignorance, out of maya, out of sleep. How wonderful. What nectar today. Immediately up early in the morning. I remember I first came to Krishna's temple in London, Bhaktivedanta Manor. So by Krishna's arrangement, I couldn't leave because there was a snowstorm. So I was forced to stay. So they got me up early in the morning and threw me in the cold shower in the middle of winter. And it seemed... Then Mangalarti, freezing cold, there's no money to heat the temple. But the devotees are singing and dancing. This beautiful song. And what is the meaning? I have no idea. But so beautiful, and devotees, it's freezing cold, but they're singing and dancing with all the blissful look on their face. I can immediately understand. These people, they're not ordinary people. They're getting some pleasure on the transcendental platform. Otherwise, who wants to get up in the middle of the night in the cold English winter and take a cold shower and still they're happy? And they're dancing. Especially British people, they don't dance. It's not British. You know. Only when you get intoxicated. That's all. And then you... But they're up early in the morning and singing and dancing. I can immediately understand these people. They're definitely getting some energy from some higher source. Otherwise, how can they be doing this? Otherwise, either they're crazy or they're on a transcendental platform. So, I can understand they're not crazy because everyone in the material world is crazy. That was obvious. But these people, they're doing it for God. They must be in contact with God. They're talking, all they ever talk about is Krishna, Krishna. Whenever you speak with them, all they say is Krishna. And even their food they offer to Krishna. And everything they do, they're dressed like this, they have tilak, it's all for the sake of Krishna. And it's all for the sake of God. So they're getting transcendental potency. So that's a fact. A devotee, he rises early in the morning feeling bliss. And how wonderful, another day in the service of Krishna. There's so many things to do in the service. We have so much work in the service of Krishna, so many things to do. There are so many people all over the world who have to know about Krishna. They must come to Krishna consciousness. They don't know about it yet. There are so many devotees of Krishna in this country who don't know it. They're just going to work or going to school, and they don't know that they're devotees of Krishna. But they're just waiting for someone to come. Here's a book about Krishna. Oh, and they read, and what's this? They come to they start associating, they start chanting. There's so many people just like you. Previously, you didn't know, right? You didn't know about Krishna. You thought life means to go to school and eat some bread and pass stool and listen, watch some TV. This is life. You didn't know about Krishna. Now you know about Krishna, your life has changed. There's so many people in your country and all over the world, they don't know about Krishna yet, or they may have heard something, but they haven't come to the point of understanding that there's no meaning to life except to serve Krishna. So devotees, they have a very exciting mission, that how we can go out and find all those devotees who don't realize yet that they're devotees. Great mission. Just like some kind of hunting, transcendental hunting. Where are the devotees? Hunting kamis, they like to go hunting. And do you do that in your country? They go out with guns and they shoot rabbits and deer. And very demoniac, actually. But devotees, they're going out looking. Where are those spirit souls who are eager to understand Krishna? Where are they? There are so many. You can't tell. You can never tell. They're walking around. They may be old or young. Or they may be very pleasant behaved, or they may be very nasty. Sometimes some very nasty people, they also change and become devotees. You don't know, who are these people? They're all spirit soul. Actually, everyone. They're all servants of Krishna. But some people, mostly, we all forgot. So it's a great mission, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to find out all the people, where are they? And that's the greatest pleasure. Greatest pleasure is to find out someone who they forgot Krishna, and now, oh, they're gradually taking it up. Krishna himself, he likes to do this. He finds such pleasure in waking others up to Krishna consciousness that he himself comes as Lord Chaitanya and preaches Krishna consciousness by spreading the holy names, requesting people to preach, discussing philosophy with them, appointing his disciples, six Goswamis, renovate, find out Vrindavan, and write books. And then the six Goswamis, carrying the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, send their disciples to preach, take the books, preach. And this is going on to the present time. The same movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, came to chant Hare Krishna. This is the victory sound. That wherever there is the chanting of the holy name, there will be, that is the sound of victory. Wherever devotees are enthusiastically chanting, then definitely Maya's influence will be chased away, and the transcendental potency of Krishna's name will waken up the sleeping souls. So devotees have to go out among the people who are sleeping in the witch, in the lap of the witch called Maya, chant the names of Krishna. That will enter the hearts of the sleeping souls and waken them up and enliven them. This is the joyful life of Krishna consciousness. Arjuna forgot it. He became despondent. But as long as the devotee remains in the mood of conquering over Maya, let us conquer over Maya, just like Arjuna had to conquer over the forces of the Kauravas. Conquer over Maya by preaching Krishna consciousness. And there will be some casualties. No doubt, in preaching, in fighting Maya, there may be some casualties. Even some big generals may fall. But their service is not forgotten. And those who are alive and strong in Krishna consciousness should remain alive and strong in Krishna consciousness by always adhering to sadhana and chanting very nicely, studying Prabhupada's books, not entertaining foolish nonsense ideas, but knowing that knowledge is real knowledge is that which comes in parampara. When Prabhupada is the great empowered associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who has given us this knowledge, so what we have heard in disciplic succession, what Prabhupada has given us, that we should follow. We don't need any concocted, convoluted, silly ideas. Just follow what the acharyas have given us, simple system, chant Hare Krishna, and be happy. Spread that to others. In that way, we'll remain strong, blissful, and happy, and always the strength of Krishna will be there to help us. So this is the point we can deduced from this first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes we think there's not so much instruction in Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, but actually there's very important instruction that as long as we remain with Krishna, we remain strong. But if we don't, then we become overcome by fear, ignorance, doubts, and delusion. This can be learned from this chapter. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Please. Please, what is your question? Well, I think the class, what I was saying, that's understood from this, isn't if you have life, you can preach. What does that mean? Life means if you have conviction in Krishna consciousness. Actually, preaching, it's not a stereotype thing. You can't preach in a formal way. Preaching means when one's heart is full of Krishna consciousness and it bubbles over. That a devotee is someone who's actually hearing about Krishna and thinking of Krishna, then naturally he not only wants to share his Krishna consciousness with others, but he must do. He cannot but preach. Someone who's Krishna conscious, he cannot but chant Hare Krishna. He can't stop chanting Hare Krishna. The one kind of chanting is doing formally Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I have to chant my rounds. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. When's this going to be finished? Another kind of chanting is that chanting which just, the chanting is not coming from the tongues or the lip. It comes from the heart, automatically. Hare Krishna. So when one has got the life of Krishna consciousness, when he's actually feeling the bliss of Krishna consciousness, then he must preach. You know, you can't stop him preaching. So again, that begins with sadhana, faith, conviction, all these things will give us the strength by which we must preach Krishna consciousness. Any other question? Well, can we have... Yeah, all right, go on. In practice among the devotees. Well, Prabhupada, towards the end of his pastimes in this planet and this particular time, he said he wanted to go to Gita Nagari farm and establish that. In other words, the vision Prabhupada had was of all these farms, there's so many farm, big properties were purchased while Prabhupada was present, because Prabhupada had the idea that devotees will live on the land, produce their own food, and chant Hare Krishna. As far as Varnashram, living in the city is demoniac society. This getting a job and working for some multinational corporation or whatever, that's not Varnashram. Varnashram is a land-based society. There are also cities within Varnashram communities, but it's land-based, agriculture-based. That was Prabhupada's vision. Produce your own food. Don't be dependent. Don't be economically dependent upon the demoniac society which sucks you in. But devotees should live independently from this, produce their own food, and make their own communities where we can live and chant Hare Krishna without having to depend upon the demoniac society in which you become influenced by that. When Prabhupada said he had 50% of his work to do, you can understand it's a very big thing, considering what Prabhupada did. It's a very big thing. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejects Varnashram.
Yeah, yeah. And this is the first step.
Yeah.
And how can this first step is not established in our society? And how can we go deeper? Because this first step.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected Varnashram because he rejected so many things. When he eventually came to the point, pure devotional service is accepted. This is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was interested in. But Prabhupada explained, for the common people, they're not ready to take up the platform. Pure devotional service means beyond all designations. What's that verse? Who can say important verse? Okay, say it. Serving the master of the senses. Whose name? Bhakti Ruchyate. Bhakti means when we're free from all designations, bodily designations, and engaged in the service, engaging our senses in the master of the senses, namely Krishna, Hrishikesh. That is bhakti, that is devotional service. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Nahang vipro, nachanarapati, napi vaishya, napi shudra. I'm not a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi. He identified himself as gopi bharta padakamalaya dasa dasa anudasaha. I'm the servant of the servant of the lotus feet of the gopis or the devotees of Gopi Bhata, sorry, the Krishna, who is the master of the gopis. So this is the transcendental position. But Prabhupada noted that we're not in the transcendental position. Even Prabhupada endeavored to bring his disciples immediately to the transcendental position. But then he saw they're falling down. Even I make sannyasis, they're falling down. Even they become married, they're not sticking to their vows. So Prabhupada saw that it is required that we have Varnashram to help people to gradually advance. Varnashram means some system within which society is organized. Varnashram acharavata purushena parapumam vishnor aradyate panta nanya tattavashakarana. This verse was rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That one should perform one's duties within the Varnashram system. Vishnur aradyate, worshipping Vishnu. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected eho bhajya, this is external. It is not the essence. The essence is Vishnu aradhana, without consideration of the different upadhis or designations that the Varnashram system brings. Designations which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected. I'm not a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Grihastha, Brahmachari, all these things. But that designation is required as long as if the alternative of pure devotion is material life. And for us, material life means illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, all these things. So Varnashram, it's a net to catch us from falling very deeply. That means the cultural background in which we act in a certain position within society and at the same time worship Krishna. The danger with that is that we become caught up in the I'm a Brahmana, I'm a Kshatriya, I'm a Vaishya, I'm a Shudra. You become caught up in that and forget that the whole purpose of all this is to worship Vishnu or Krishna. But on the other hand, if we don't have that, then you become a hippie, that's all. And that's what happens. If you're not ready, if you're not fit to be on the fully transcendental position, then you have to, inherently, there must be some compromise with material life. And you have to face that and see what is the situation. That all right, you're not Paramahamsa, so you have some material attachments, so you can't fully take up Krishna consciousness immediately. Therefore, you have to act in terms of your material attachments and gradually become purified. But there's no such system in the modern society because the modern society is meant for going to hell. It's meant for sense gratification. Therefore, the Varnashram system is required to engage people in such a way that they may become purified. Without that, we're suffering. Devotees, they take up Krishna consciousness with great hope. Then they find, you know, I can't become pure devotee overnight. What's the alternative? And without Varnashram alternative, the alternative is get some job in some office. Or apart from the engagement, there's the whole culture of material life that goes with it. And therefore, even though our devotees become married, they don't know how to live a married life because their role model for married life is that of the demoniac society, which is simply based on sense gratification. So it's very much required. 50%. It's a big amount of work we have to do. It's not an easy thing. At this stage, my personal contribution to this, it's going to be a big job, it's not going to happen overnight. My personal contribution to this is encouraging whoever is ready to do so to live on the land, produce their own food, live simply and chant Hare Krishna. I'm also trying in my own small way to promote the Indian culture or Vedic. When we say Vedic culture, that is still represented to some extent in India. So when I say Indian culture, that doesn't mean the modern cinema culture, but the original culture, which is still going on to some extent in India today. So for that reason, I'm encouraging devotees to go to India, spend some time there, try to understand the culture. I'm writing books to try to give some idea of this culture. At the moment I wrote this Brahmachari book, which gives some idea of Brahmachari life, which is the easiest ashram to write about because it's very simple and straightforward. Grihastha life, there are many complexities. So I've written about that, and I've written one book, this Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life, to give some idea of the kind of culture we should be heading towards, so that even living in the city, we can try to, at least the behavioral modes, how we behave with each other, we can try to begin to adopt that. It's a big job, so we have to go step by step. At least at this stage, I'm trying to create some, as I say, in my own small way, writing articles for Bhakti Godhead magazine, trying to create some awareness of what that culture is. It's very difficult without that culture of Krishna consciousness to fully take up Krishna consciousness, actually. Because if we remain culturally Westerners, it's going to be very difficult to fully take up Krishna consciousness. Of course, to some extent, we're living in the Western world, we can't just ignore it, but at the same time we should, within this Western world, try to take up the culture of Vaishnavism. There are many facets to this. The essence of Vaishnav culture is love of Krishna. There are many, even things that you may say, well, the dress doesn't matter. If you are fully Krishna conscious, the dress doesn't matter. But if you're not, all these things help. Dressing in dhoti or sari helps us to remind that this is our culture. Helps us to, by dressing as Vaishnavas, helps us to think like Vaishnavas or behave like Vaishnavas. Just like the policeman, when he's dressed in his uniform, it gives him some sense, I am a policeman. So all these things are very helpful. Is there any other question? All right, then we'll finish then. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Part of the Vedic culture is distributing prasadam. I often like to distribute prasadam after classes. When I was leaving London, I think 3 days ago, devotees very kindly gave me some Mahaprasad, Mangalarti sweets from Sri Sri Radha Landanishwara. So, I mean, they didn't give me a whole suitcase full, it's just a little, so I can give just a little to everybody because I have many places to go to. And also I was given some Mahaprasad in Zagreb, so we can have the little prasad from there also. Hare Krishna. As I was saying, I also have my books. I think some of you may have seen my books before. If you haven't, or if you'd like to take some other volumes, you're welcome. You'd like to say something about my books? What happened to the water? Mahaprasade Govinde Nama Brahmane Vaishnave Sraupam Panyavatam Rajan Vishvaso Naiva Jayate Mahaprasad Ki Jai. That's from Landanishwara. And this is from... Actually, I'll distribute two times. Okay, so you took one. Oh, come again afterwards. It's easier for me to serve. So we're having two phases here. One is Radha Landanishwara Prasad, and the other is from Zagreb Gornitai Prasad. So step by step. Well, it's
I finished writing it apart from one or two things, and of course of time I have to print it, but now I'm traveling in Europe and going back to India, and then shortly after that I'm traveling in the Middle East, and I'll go back to India, and then shortly after that I'll be traveling in Russia. So most of the rest of the year I'm going to be traveling, so I hope in course of time I can also do this. Hare Krishna. Jay. Yeah, I'll sign just. Okay, phase two. Still on phase one? Who's on phase one? Is it phase one, hands forward. Oh. You got some paper. You're going to need the paper too, if you like. Okay, who didn't get prasad from London? Anyone? Okay, so now Zagrebsky. Oh, that's Russian, wait a minute. It's not Croatian, Slovenian, wait a minute. Which country are we in? Pandita. Many verses, that's nice. Learn some more. Why don't you teach the others to learn also?